Mama, close that.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is Wednesday, and yes, we're back. And I do have to apologize because I was kind of out of action last week, and we missed a week. But that means we just have more to talk about today, Tim. So welcome, Tim Peel, my friend and my partner right here on Snipes and Stripes on NoFilter.net. It is another episode on Wednesday, and we got a great show for you tonight. We have the epic and the notorious Biz Nasty going to be joining us in about a couple of minutes. Buddy, does it get any better? Does it get a bit into that, Tim? No. What's up, pal?
It's awesome, buddy. I'm coming to you live from Mexico. It's unfortunate we missed a week, but like you say, we got a lot to talk about. The NHL's humming. We're in the final throes of the last few weeks of the regular season, which means playoffs are right around the corner, which is the best time of year, buddy.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, and you continue to wear your wife's glasses, which I just love. You know, I don't know what you're doing, but I don't even want to hear it. It's embarrassing, and I'll just deal with it. But sorry. But thanks to Whiskey in the Wild, my chocolate whiskey, my chocolate orange whiskey, as a sponsor for today. And Bleav is fantastic, and there's no question that Bet Online, who is one of our favorite sponsors, Bet Online. The tournament is here. Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there. The odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championships. You can access most of the up to the minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your brackets real time all the way through the tournament. Head to Bet Online today to get on all of the action. Remember to use the promo code Bleav, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And remember, Bet Online, the game starts here and the game starts now. Tim, we got to say something about our good friend, Chris Simon. It is a absolute, just one of the biggest, saddest things that I've heard in a long time. Chris Simon committing suicide the other day. This is something that has become rampant in the National Hockey League over the last 10 years, and we lost another good person, man. Chris Simon was a good friend of mine, and you've known him for a long time. What's your thoughts on Chris?
Yeah, it's very sad. You know, JR, 52 years old. Chris Simon, man. He was the ultimate warrior. He bled and fought for every team he played. I saw a tweet today by, you know, Kevin Kaminsky, Killer Kaminsky, one of the toughest guys ever to play.
Yeah.
And it's breaking a lot of guys' hearts because Killer said Chris Simon was one of the best teammates he ever had. You know, we went through that stretch where we had Bugard, Rippon, Bielak, kind of in a short period of time. And then, you know, nothing's happened the last couple of years. And then with Chris Simon today, it's very sad.
And, well, we had Miller, Hayes, we lost, unfortunately, not by the situation, no. But we lost Hayes.
Jimmy Hayes.
Yeah. We lost Chris. I've known Chris for a long time. I used to work out with him in LA. He was a beast. He was the strongest man, and he was one of the greatest guys ever. To think that this could even happen brings up a whole new question of how are we going to protect our friends, our people, our teammates that have been in the league, that have now found a way through life and are now struggling with other addictions, other problems, other issues that we need to help them with. Because Chris Simon was not, I don't think he was 100% sad in his life. I think he had hope. I've known Chris. I've known him for a long time. He was a big motorcycle driver. He loved people. He had kids. There's something that is interlying, and I don't know if there's an answer to how we can help these guys. Is CTE the problem? Is depression the problem? Is retiring and not being part of the team the problem? Is it financially the problem?
Right.
We need to help these guys, man. I just, it's really a scary thing.
Yeah, it is. You know what? CTE is obviously a real thing, but you touched on something right now that a lot of guys really haven't mentioned, and that is the financial aspect, JR. And I think that is a part of it for sure. You know, I don't know Chris Simon's financial position that he was in, but I think that definitely plays into it. I don't think we can blame it just on CTE. I saw Matthew Barnaby's tweet earlier. Here we go. Here we got the big biz nasty with us.
You know, it's actually perfect timing. So everybody, welcome one of my good friends and one of the greatest people in all, I don't want to say all of television, but maybe all of internet. And it's the biz. Listen, biz. We're talking about obviously about the passing and the unfortunate incident with Chris Simon. And I really see what you think of, because you had a very similar role that Chris Simon had. You understand the issues that you have to deal with, the trauma that you have to deal with, the mentality you have to deal with. What are your thoughts right now after hearing of Chris Simon?
Oh, I mean, it's obviously terrible, devastated. The hockey family lost an amazing person. As far as like what he had to endure as a player, and maybe I didn't know him that well personally, so I don't know what he fell back onto. Like, you know, I know I had anxiety sometimes about that role in fighting, and he had to fight far tougher guys than I had to, and he had also had to produce. Like, he was a heck of a hockey player, right? And he also came up in an era where, I mean, I was scared when I was fighting in the American League, same with the NHL, but like those guys were also, to me, a little bit of a different breed. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to survive in that time he was doing it. So I don't know him well enough to whether like it was, you know, he was going towards alcohol or any type of crutch in order to deal with what you have to deal with as an enforcer. So I don't want to speak into anything I don't know, but if those were things.
But what is it about being the enforcer that is what goes through your mind in the course of a day, course of a game, course of a leading up to a game? It can't be easy, because I've talked with like Stu Grimson and other people that it's a different mentality, Biz, right? And you were in it and you had to deal with it. What is it like on a day-to-day basis, knowing going into a game that this was going to be part of your job?
Yeah, so for me it was difficult, because like it wasn't very natural. Like, I like to play far more above than I like to fight. When I was playing in junior and started my professional career, when I was a defenseman, I did it like 5 to 8 times a year. Just, you know, you're in a net front battle and it's like, sure, you'd had enough of the guy and you dropped him. It wasn't till I got to pro, my fourth year, when they switched me to forward, that I was basically, hey, the writing was on the wall. So I went from being like maybe like a fifth or sixth defenseman to, hey, you're a fourth liner. And what was going to separate me from the other guys were the guys willing to go out there and fight, like exactly kind of what Rempe is doing now. He's making a name for himself, right? So to direct it towards that. So I had to fight back-to-back 30 fight seasons in the American League, where I'm telling you, like, it wasn't genuine, but I did get the feedback and positivity to my teammates that I was contributing based on protecting them. If somebody was taking the liberty, I was willing to go take the attention away from them and say, hey, fucker, let's go. Like Jeremy, yeah. Monty, Nasty, Morasty. So the lead up to on the day of wasn't pleasant. You'd go to morning skate, you'd go eat your pregame meal, and then you're trying to get a pregame nap. And sometimes they weren't as pleasant as others, knowing that you're more than likely going to have to drop the gloves with someone who you thought could beat you up. Now,
well, yeah. You know what?
There were certain guys though who were nails, who were licking their chops. Like Curtis McDermott, I think he loves it. I don't know what it did to me. So sorry, Timmy, to cut you off.
No, not at all. JR had a good point, and it really that doesn't get brought up on social media, because everyone wants to throw out CTE. It's like, you know. And but Barnaby had a tweet today that he doesn't necessarily blame, you know, the ripping and the Bougard. You know, we know Derek Bougard was I think he was addicted to oxycodone and some other drugs. And JR had a good point. He goes, is some of this sometimes financial? Like, we don't know. Like, is it
same with Jimmy Hayes? Same with Jimmy Hayes. Yeah.
I don't know whatever anybody's personal struggles were and what they were going through, whether they're public or not. But I think it's very fair to assume that there are a lot of contributing issues that can cause mental illness. To just say it was their lifestyle, like, yeah, there are other high pressure jobs that lead individuals to maybe use something as a crutch. It's not just, I mean, it just so happens that that's a pretty violent one. And I would assume that, if I'm like repetitive getting hit, there is obviously science that says towards like, this is going to cause you to go maybe down a deeper, darker hole, not be yourself. And, you know, you're dealing with concussion-like symptoms. So I'm not interested in getting in that battle back and forth. I'd rather it just be a conversation. Like, obviously, I think that there are ways that maybe and the league has improved and society has improved on how to deal with that to today's standpoint. Obviously, there's less fighting. And they're treated like if a guy gets bumped into and it looks like he might have gotten hit hard, they pull him down the tunnel to make sure he's all right. Like, there are things that are different about today's game.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with you, and I think it's too easy. I think it's an easy thing to say for the couch reporters or whatever you want to call them, that they automatically want to go to CTE. You and I are, all three of us are good friends with Kelly Chase, Tony Twist, Stu Grimson, a lot of guys that we know that played that role and in that era, a serious role. And they're living great lives, and so let's not blame every death.
Tim. But that leads me into that, and I don't want to take away from Biz time because we love having Biz on here. We're gonna grab him, but as a referee, and I'm sure Biz would like to hear. Did the league talk to you as referees about how you deal with fighting on the ice, like letting guys fight, how long you let them fight? You're a referee. Like, and you have a big part in allowing these guys to fight. What is the league saying to you when you were in the league?
Really, really just in the last probably 10 years when we would get, an expert in to talk to us at training camp about concussions. That's kind of when we really became aware, like, you know, hey, we got to protect these guys. But the linesman, as Biz knows, like, you played that role. The linesmen are your best friends, and these linesmen know when to get in there when someone is when they feel someone's getting taken advantage of. So, really, in the last 10 years, it's probably come to the forefront more than it.
Would it be fair to say that they've kind of been instructed to maybe jump in? They'd rather be wrong on jumping in early than wrong and jumping in late. And that's 100%. Once again, where the league and everybody is going to say, hey, listen, I know we want to all see them punch each other in the face for 30 more seconds, but we felt that was the time to step in. And I think the point had been proven. So it's all about these measures that are being taken into account. And, you know, like once again, like to not take away from what happened to Chris and so many players before him, I don't know what it was, but it's terrible, and it's a terrible loss to the hockey world.
I know.
Well, let's all say a prayer for Chris Simon, and let's hope that the people that are out there battling with the same issues get help. And we love all of our teammates. Speaking of loving all our teammates, Biz, I freaking love you.
I love you.
You know I love you.
I love you too,
Biz. You know I love you, and. You know, people always say to me, you know, you got fired from your job because of your stuff with spitting chiclets. And I said, no, I didn't. Spitting chiclets had nothing to do with my firing. My firing all had to do with lefty, progressive, liberal, just idiotic disagreements and people that didn't like me. Had nothing to do with what I said, had nothing to do with where I was. And I was on one of the biggest podcasts in sports in the world today. And that is Spitting Chiclets with you and your buddy Wits. And I want to know, how in the hell did you find your way to this superstardom and what was your biggest break? Because like you didn't have a huge career, but you are one of the biggest social media superstars in the world. How the hell did you do that?
A lot of luck, a lot of fun. And I think it all always comes down to like having fortunate bounces and kind of finding yourself in certain places along the way and meeting great people. Like, I mean, you play with the Coyotes, like Rich Nairn's always a name that comes up where like he helped spearhead.
Rich Nairn,
yeah. Like he worked for the Coyotes forever. And he was our PR guy when I had a Twitter account. So he kind of like had to help me navigate it to a certain degree, because obviously at one point it was maybe a little bit off the rails compared to what anybody in the NHL would deem okay. But he helped me with that. And then when I retired, he helped me get into broadcasting as the Arizona Coyotes radio guy. So, you know, just the fact that I got there to propel me into that side of it, like that's how I started my broadcasting career. That's how I also got comfortable even before the podcast, filling a lot of air, right? Like, cause you're doing the color on radio. So me and Bob would be going back and forth and you're talking for a good 3 hours. So that stamina was just created, I believe, there, where I was now used to talking on the podcast, where I had no idea I was going to end up there. So good bounces and fortunate.
Yeah. What was the break? There has to be, there's one situation that had to have propelled you to where you're going.
I would say joining Spit and Chicklets obviously would be that would be the beginning. And
yeah, but how did that happen?
Well, so Witt had reached out via a tweet and he asked me and Colby Armstrong, he goes, "You guys want to start a podcast?" And this is when I was still playing with the Ontario Reign. And I still wanted to play a couple more years. And I knew that if I was going on this podcast that I would be saying things that wouldn't. And also I was with the Kings organization and they told me to stay the F off of Twitter. And they gave me an opportunity to play. So I was like, I'm not going to.
Whoa. So yeah, the team told you to stay off of Twitter?
Yeah, because I went from the Coyotes, who were very lenient about that, because I think that for a small market team, they kind of wanted, you know, it was okay for them to have a personality and maybe thing that is attracting you other than an on ice play. Like we got this kind of this off ice clown. So they were receptive to it, where LA, they were going for Stanley Cups. And it was during the Dean Lombardi era, where he was like, yeah, we're okay having this guy, 'cause Mike Fiuta brought me in, but we just don't want the Twitter antics. We don't want that drama here. And that was, I respected that. And I got to go away for 3 years off of Twitter, really. I wasn't tweeting much. I would go on and read it every now and then and every so often and pay attention to what was going on. But I kind of went dark. I went away and I kind of tried to, you know, see what everybody else was doing and take as much information as possible to learn to what I wanted to do next. And one of the things was, is a lot of people were doing like content, like pushing their own stuff. So that when I retired, finally, and I'll go back to the podcast, because you talked about breaks and like, oh, what was the big break? It was like there were so many moments along the way. So my first summer after retiring, instead of taking the summer off and retiring, I filmed a film project with Pasha, my buddy, my right-hand man, who films the Sandbaggers and edits the Sandbaggers.
He's awesome. Amazing man.
Amazing. He's great. He's talented, yeah. Right? And he was hungry. So we did this full summer excursion when I just had ACL surgery, setting up logistics, like paying cameramen and filming this silly project. But it taught me, you know, a little bit about timing in front of the camera and how to be, you know, and kind of having to do it guerrilla style. So you got to fucking go, man. Like you don't have a trailer and you come out with your blind and go back to your trailer. You're fucking directing it. You're fucking moving, shaking. And on the back end, editing, clipping, like time. So I learned so much about the overall industry in that 3 months instead of sitting on my ass. And then that season is when I started with the Coyotes. And at the end of that season, finally, I feel that I'd had enough going on, and Barstool was willing to release that footage of all that stuff that we'd done, along with announce that I was on the podcast. And then that was kind of the step and introduction into the Barstool/Chicklets world. And then I don't know what they were averaging for a listenership, you know, maybe 50, maybe 75,000. And it's gotten, you know, it's over half. Like, we get crazy amounts of downloads per pod.
Well, crazy.
Well, you know what, Biz? you were obviously one of the first guys, the hockey players, to go on Twitter. And I remember with the ice bucket challenge, and that was another thing that
there
I
was one other thing
that really propelled you, because you were on the, I think you were Camelback or one of the mountains in Scottsdale, and you had a helicopter. People are going.
It was it was in BC.
No, he was in Boston. He was up in he was up
Vancouver. Okay, yeah, so it was a buddy of mine, Vancouver. Bradley Friesen, who right. He has a chopper, and he put all that together, and I just so happened to be the guy in front of it,
most guys are taking a bucket by the pool, and here you have a helicopter taking it to a whole nother level, right? And that went crazy when you did that.
Yeah, that one popped. That one went. I think that guy had like 10, 11 million views on YouTube. So
yeah.
Bradley Friesen's a very talented guy out of BC. And he does tons of awesome stuff. He has a dog that he does like an Instagram for called Mr. Bentley. And I mean, sure, if people are listening, this is live, right? You guys do it live?
We got guys
right now in our chat that are just asking questions, and I'll get to them soon.
Yeah, no worries. And then so he like, if you go follow him and they go on these crazy adventures. He's got a chopper. He just kind of goes, and he's helped out people when there were like floods going on in like northern BC, where he's helping out with his chopper. So he I think him and his brother and family made some good dough off of like a patent off of like the hand dryers or the paper towel dispensers. So he's smart with his dough, and he chills, and he just goes up in his chopper and he has a good time. And I collab with him there. And I don't want to forget to mention though, what was the big break? Also, you know, just finding myself with RA, Grinnell, Witt, and our team, right? Like everybody's got different personalities, and it just works, and everybody brings what they bring.
That's one thing, Biz, but listen, what is it about you that you can say whatever the frick you want, and it doesn't matter?
Yeah. So I've slowly
hold on.
Yeah, that's fair.
Hold on. I got canceled and fired for something very small, and some of the things that you say, by the way, I love and I laugh, and it's great. You get a pass for anything that you want to say. You get a pass from the NHL. You get a pass from Bettman. You get a pass from the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, I don't think they obviously don't.
And
enjoy
I love it.
No, they don't enjoy it.
I love it. No, by the way, I love it. And by the way, thank you for doing that. Hold on, Tim. Thank you for doing it, because this is what we need. Because they do it for certain people, but they don't do it for others.
Well, yeah, and your situation.
Do you get any backlash from the league or from anybody?
So obviously there's situations where I say something that maybe they deem, and I go in and I apologize, and like they don't make me. It hasn't gotten to the point. Well, luckily, I don't want to say anything that's going to upset them to where they're like, hey, we basically you have to do a public apology or we're going to fire you. I also was it was a little bit different. Like and listen, the thing that happened with you on our podcast sucked. And we also, after the podcast, so everybody knows, we asked you, hey, do you want anything taken out? And now, do I blame you for saying what you said? I always said, like, oh, I'm assuming since you've been on a vacation, it was something you would have probably made a joke about on vacation, where your employer at NBC kind of deemed it where, I don't know what personal stuff you guys had going, where they deemed it, like, hey, that's it, we're done. Or you had the opportunity to apologize for it, where you're like, I'm not apologizing for that. Now, I've never been put in that situation where they're asking me to do that. But I also came from a place where I'm like, listen, like, if I'm just staying over here at Chiclets, my life is Gucci. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
If you want to take all that from me, like, I don't. And that is not to be grateful for the opportunity. I love working with TNT and everything they're about, and the people there. They're fucking incredible. And they're also a little bit more lenient as to the stuff you're talking about. But I kind of just always been that when I Brant, you know, Brant Myers, when I was playing in my last years, when I was not fucking worried about Twitter and I was asking a lot of questions and trying to figure shit out. He explained to me like what an LLC was and how you could have your own business. So when I started my career with the Coyotes, I made one stipulation, because that was going to be my first employer out of hockey. You hire Press Box Entertainment, my LLC. That's it. You don't own me. You can hire my business. So that's how I always approached it, where it's kind of like, and listen, I'm not saying he's the best role model. It seems like Floyd Money Mayweather, like he was always talking about, like, make sure you got control of your shit.
Right.
So if Barstool wants to deal with me, they deal with PressBox. If TNT wants to deal with me, they deal with PressBox. So if if TNT doesn't want to deal with PressBox anymore, it's okay. I got, and then also my time and energy that's going into whatever's taken from me, I'll just direct it towards something else, whether it's fucking personal fitness, whether it's, do I want to start doing more real estate stuff? I don't know. So
yeah, but how busy are you?
So to go back to your question is like, how do I get away with it? It's kind of like, it's how I've always operated. I've always just like, I'm at a place now where if everything was taken to me, I'd say, okay, see you fucking later. I'll go live the rest of my life. And, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. I just like, hey, I mean, I also don't want to use that to like, for not like any good purposes. Like I just like that. I'm just fucking around and
don't ever change.
Yeah.
Don't you ever change.
But
don't
also
you
ever like, change. If I say something that I'm like, ah, fuck, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. Yeah, I'm usually pretty good at self-reflection and then apologizing. So I hope I answered your question appropriately.
It's great. It's awesome.
Did they give you an opportunity to like maybe apologize for it in order to stick around?
No, they didn't. I really feel they were looking for the slightest opportunity to get rid of me, and I think I was getting ready for a contract. You know, I think they saw certain things that were happening. They didn't need to pay me what they wanted to pay me. Listen, it's all well and good. It's probably the best thing that ever happened to me is getting fired, to tell you the truth. And, you know, I've been really impressed watching you and Wits and your content creativity. And you guys must have a big team. You guys have a great team over there.
Because quickly also to go back to that conversation, I could also understand where you would be, because like you also gave a lot more to the game than I did. I feel like the game doesn't owe me anything. If anything, I feel like I'm like, oh, fucking, hey, I got to spend 5 years in the show. You scored 500 goals as a player. You know, from an entertainment perspective, did a lot for the league. You haven't been acknowledged through the Hockey Hall of Fame now. So
there's zero loyalty.
Correct.
Okay. It's what happens. Like, what have you done for me lately? And by the way, I got to say this. And this is important. It's the first time I've ever said something like this. I have done a lot of things when I was a player, when I was an NHL guy that I don't feel proud about. And I got caught up in a lot of, like you have, Biz, and a lot of the same situations to where we've said things or done things that we look back on and we're like, why did I even say that? Why did I even do that?
Correct.
But everybody has. There are guys there's guys in the Hall of Fame that have been arrested, that have done things that are just terrible, but they're still there. I've done a lot of things and said a lot of things, and that's fine. I have no problem. But there's zero loyalty, in my opinion, in the National Hockey League.
Like I said, I don't have that experience, so I could understand where like not only from the playing perspective, but also then on the media side, you feel like you didn't get a fair shake. And I don't know what the battles are.
Well, I don't know why it is.
What's that?
I was there 10 years. I mean, I was there 10 years. I had great 10 years, 10 great years with NBC. Yeah. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to deny that. You know, I'm not going to bash them. I'm not there anymore. It's done. It's over. Yeah. It was a great 10 years. They allowed me, and you know what it's like, Biz. They allowed me to come into somebody's living room and entertain them. You do that better than anyone, right? And you guys, what does it feel like for you to entertain these people day in, day out?
It's fun, man. It's silly. Like, sometimes I take it serious, you have to kind of talk about something serious, but for the most part, it's fun, man. Like, the league's thriving, and it's the the players in the league are making our job easy. I feel like the league and the game is in a better place than maybe ever before. The parity, the storylines, and you know, just the superstardom, what these guys are capable of doing out there on the ice. Like the fact that McDavid, like this, like, you know, Makar, these players even exist. Like whoever would have thought that the game 20 years ago would have evolved to the level it is now. So it's awesome to talk about. And you know, as much as Gary gets criticized for certain things, I think from an overall standpoint, he's done a decent job of.
He's done amazing job.
Yeah. I feel like, and like best on best was probably the only thing that you could have held over his head. Now they're making an effort to like get us back quickly with next year and kind of grow it. And yeah, there's a lot of positive momentom, and it's great.
Biz, I gotta ask you. I've been laughing on the sidelines about you and Butch scoring. Okay, like it is literally freaking cracked me up. Like I love the T-shirt that I think Liam McHugh made for you, and with a picture of Butch on it. And have you guys contacted each other? Like, because you gave it to him. You were, you know, saying, talking about him wearing diapers. And it was funny shit.
Man. We're just fucking like, around.
It was funny shit.
I think he's pissed. I think that he's pissed. I think he would probably sucker me if he saw me. So I got
to
be careful.
Did I see the other day that he wanted to go on TNT with you?
Oh, I would fucking love that.
Would that be hilarious?
Oh, that would be so good for one of them. Now, I don't know him, but I would imagine he's like, I mean, were you watching him growing up? Do you remember watching him play,
JR? Yeah,
and Timmy, yeah, you guys.
He had the ugliest helmet. He had the ugliest helmet in the National Hockey League.
Was he like a savage to play against? I mean, he won a Conn Smythe.
No, he was. You know, he was one of those guys. He was gritty, right? He was gritty. He was a great defensive forward. He was in your face all the time. He was one of those guys that was a pain in the ass to play against. You know, and by the way.
How did he win a Conn Smythe? Did he just go on a crazy run offensively?
Yeah, well, I mean, his team won 4 Stanley Cups.
Well, I know, there's four opportunities, right? The likes of guys like Kucherov and like who won Conn Smythe? Like,
yeah. Well, listen, he was a dominant player back when he played, and that's his personality, is to be aggressive, right? And he's being aggressive with you, and he's very proud of his team. And is he right now? Are the New York Islanders? Because he's trying to defend the New York Islanders. Are the New York Islanders worthy of being defended right now? Because I don't think they are. I don't think they're playing the type of hockey that they could be defended right now after they had a huge coaching change, because they haven't gotten much better since that coaching change.
Yeah. So I think that it would be a scary team to meet in the first round. The reason I say that is because when they're playing 5-on-5 this season, their record's not terrible. Right. I think they have 15 or 16 losses in overtime and shootout. So they're not a good 3-on-3 team. They're not a good shootout team. That's not how they're built, right? So I give them a little bit more leniency. Now, they were playing a lot better, even from like a shot and generating perspective, since Patty Waugh took over. Like, he made structural changes. But lately, they've been kind of fucking the dog. I think that they're just top heavy on offense, and they don't have enough firepower on the second, third, and fourth line. They get like not a ton of secondary scoring among their top 5 guys, and they're taking a dump at the wrong time. Like Patty Waugh got on Sorokin the other day saying that he's not happy with his play. I mean, his numbers are decent. They do give up a lot of high danger scoring chances, and they've gave up a fuck ton of leads this year. Third period leads, like most in the league. And that's not something that has changed since he's been there. And also, they've been getting blanked. I think they've been shut out like 3 times in the last 10 games. So, they're dangerous. If they make it, they're dangerous. But they're fucking the dog right now, and they might not even make playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that earlier this year you were calling the New York Rangers Fugazis. You're a bit of a front runner. Listen, I love you, but you're a bit of a front runner. Now you're on the Toronto Maple Leafs bandwagon. Yep. Now I get beat up on social media because I get sick and tired of the Toronto Maple Leaf fans always blaming the officials and complaining and so on. They haven't won a cup in 57 years. Do you honestly think that the Toronto Maple Leafs can get out of the first round? Because I don't think they can with the back end that they have.
So, yeah, their back end's not great. So you're going to have to get exceptional goaltending. And I also don't know what type of series that if they play Boston, how they're going to want to play. Like, the good news is they're not going to get bullied around. They have a lot of guys who are feisty players that are willing to fight. So they're not going to get pushed around. And I also think that, so look at their back end, right? If you could protect the front of the net and make sure you're doing a good job of covering those hard areas, you got Giordano. He might be in and out. You got Edmondson, McCabe, Benoit, if he's in. And I'm forgetting one more guy who's a pretty big fucker. I said Giordano, Edmondson.
Well, McCabe. You got Morgan Riley.
But he's not a guy you need fight. No. You guys, you need him on the ice.
Oh, you got the guy that used to be in the LA Kings. What's his name? Is he still there?
No, Muzzin's done. He's done.
Then you have
Lindgren. So you have 4D who can muck it up. Lubushkin too. So they got five. They got five bears who are strong in front of the net, and their big guys are going to have to outperform their big guys. Like, it's not like Toronto doesn't have big guys. Like, you're telling me that, like, look at their center iceman. Like, I'm hoping Matthews outplays Zaka. I'm really hoping that. I think that we can. And then you got even if Tavares is playing second line, like, okay, who's their second line center? Coyle? Come on, Johnny T. Man to man, you got to fucking stick with Coyle. Let's go here. Nylander, you got fucking Pasta. They've had similar years. Marchand's another big name they got that you got to fucking keep up. Marner, to a man, let's go here. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be a four-game series. I think it could go down to seven games. It's going to be a difficult out, is what I'm saying.
But that D we're talking about right now.
Not good. It's not good.
No, you're comparing that D, and then you talk about a Vegas D, a Colorado D, a Carolina D.
But you would have told me that Boston Ds would have been smoking Florida's D last year.
Yeah, but Boston's D gets protected by their goaltending. The problem that happened with last year in the playoffs is their goaltender, Ullmark, made a brain-dead play that changed the entire first round in game five. He came out of the net and he did a brain dead pass that literally no goaltender should do. And it ended up in the back of the net and it gave Florida all the momentum and it was over.
So JR, you're proving my point saying that now they're going into this postseason in Boston. They didn't manage their goaltending situation last year very well. So
no, they didn't.
I agree.
There is no pressure in Toronto on that series, and I like that aspect. And who knows? So what? So for Swayman, who's been the starter all year, he lets in a softie and they lose game. So right now you're right back to the goaltending carousel, and I'd rather just have one guy going and let them worry about the headaches.
But I believe
that they could beat Boston? Yeah, I think they could.
But yeah, Luke M on our chat line says Boston ain't winning shit. Is he right?
I think that they could also then win the Stanley. You said, like, they are pretty good about not allowing a ton of high quality chances from a close proximity to the house, and then their goalies' save percentage, anything just outside the high danger, is the best in the league. So anytime they're getting a guy maybe standing still where he's like at the top of the circle and he's letting a quick wrister go, they're finding it. So they actually have good goaltending.
Let me ask you this. You know, in the playoffs, when the playoffs start, especially in the first round, guys that haven't thrown a check all year are throwing checks, right? Yeah. The level of physicality ramps up tenfold. My only concern is, can Toronto match that physicality when it comes to Matthews and Marner? Because I hate it when people say, oh, he doesn't like to be hit. Nobody likes to be hit. Okay. But does Matthews have that in his gut to say, you know what, I haven't seen that pushback from him yet.
I like to get hit, Tim. I love to get hit.
But you're crazy. So
I also think that they've done it. Like, I'm not saying that they need to take the brunt of it either. Like, I think that Matthews has shown over time that he's able to take punishment. I don't think his game is giving it. He's more focused on just getting the puck and getting, you know, getting goals, which he's been very successful at. Has he showed up to probably the demand in which Leafs fans are expecting based on what he's making? No, I would say that last year Nylander had a heck of a playoff. So yeah, it's definitely their time to step up. But I also feel that they've put guys around them who will take some of that focus away. Like I mentioned the defense, like Bertuzzi's a power forward. He's willing to do that. Max Domi's willing to do that. They picked up, I think it was Duer from Minnesota. Yep. He ain't shy to chuck him. He'll throw him. Like there's guys in their team up. If you need Ryan Reeves because Patty Maroon's in, you got another guy who, do I want Ryan Reeves playing 12 minutes of the game? No, I need him for 7 minutes. 7-8 minutes. Go out there and fucking bang
it's interesting because now we got Matt Rempe that's changing the whole mentality of the game right now, and he's the most talked about thing on social media. Is he changing the mentality? Is he creating something that the NHL does not want anymore?
No, I would say that there's always like a pendulum from like a social standard of, and there was a time where that was the concussions and everything, it's always going to be an inflammatory topic, but it's also like what separates our game, and it's happening less and they're going about it the right way. So if the heavyweight division has been revived where it's happening like 20% more because that's just where the league's gone. And that's where teams are seeing a need. And it's also a copycat league. Like you look at what happened to New Jersey.
Is there space in the game for it?
I absolutely think, especially if these guys can play. Like people are saying, like, oh, Rempe can't play. It's like, well, he's a young player who just came up. I understand he's playing 4 to 5 minutes. Listen, he clipped the guy and he got suspended and he deserved it. And there might be one other one where you say, that was a borderline. But when he hit Bastion, I was okay with that. And he's the type of guy like Jordan Tutu was back in the day, where when he gets on the forecheck, he can cause damage. Well, within the rules of the game, that's legal. If you don't want that fucking puck, then leave it for Rempe. Let him get there first if you don't want to get hit. So, to going back is like, I don't necessarily think they want it out of the game. I think that at a time where there was a lot of questions around it and it was an inflammatory topic, there was a decline of it. And now, I mean, here's another thing. We're also in the entertainment business, and UFC, and I'm not saying that you need to go full UFC and how barbaric that is, but it is thriving right now because people, when they watch hockey, they do want to see a little bit of violence. And 100%. And they also want to see emotion. It's the same reason why I want to watch the Florida Panthers play every night. And I maybe don't really care to watch other teams play. That's what I want. That's how I want it. Like if it's not what's being given to me, no worries. But if it's available, fuck yeah, I'm drinking it. What about you guys? Like watching the Panthers?
100%. That, well, I do. Actually, that was on my list of questions to ask you. Actually, was, do you think Florida's the leader in the East? Do you think they're the team favored to come out of the East?
Yeah, I would say, but once again, I would have said that about Boston last year, and that's what makes our league special. Definitely say front healthy, their power play is incredible. Like the way that they work and operate, they are fucking mean. They have amazing depth. They just got Tarasenko, who's now motivated, just like Kuznetsov, who when Tarasenko is motivated, he's a bull.
Yeah. Well, I think Florida has a different element than any other team in the National Hockey League has. And this is why I think that. Because they showed last year that they can play a physical game and literally push teams out of games and literally physically attack them and still score goals. This is the Matthew Tkachuk element of the National Hockey League that is in the Florida Panthers. Every single player on that team has bought into the Keith Tkachuk, Matthew Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk mentality, which is in your face, being able to intimidate, but also never go away. right? And it's frustrating to play against these guys. And I think Florida has created a frustrating way of playing, and they do it when they need to do it. They were playing Pittsburgh a few weeks ago, and I remember Matthew Tkachuk, after he got interviewed by the local radio person, and he literally said, our mentality in the locker room in the first period was there's no puck.
Yeah,
there's
no puck. I saw that. Yeah.
There's no puck.
Yeah.
We are gonna wear down Pittsburgh's defense in the first period so bad so they can't play in the third period. And you know what happened in the third period? They just roped them. And I don't think there's a team in the National Hockey League that has the ability to turn on their physical mentality and their physical presence and still keep up with their offensive presence like Florida can.
Yeah, so yeah, I love that's a great point. Like you're saying, and I remember the game when it was against the Penguins. I think we actually did the broadcast on TNT, and they just forecheck like madmen. So all of a sudden, you're punishing their back end, and then by the time the second period turns around, they're backed up, anticipating you dumping it in, and you're going, oh god, we got to go get the puck again. Where now their transition game is lethal. Like when the way they're able to transition the puck. So at the fact that they're cheating and they're backed off, now it gives them the line to work, and they're great off the rush. They don't have many weaknesses. Great special teams. They're unreal at transitioning. I'd say they're one of the best teams at breaking out and activating the weak side defensemen. And they have like all 6'2" defensemen who can move. Like they're all 6'2", 6'3" who can skate well. They have no weaknesses.
Biz, I want to ask you about a couple of your colleagues, because you know Banger and I are best buddies. You saw him the other night, the other day with the leprechaun. He had that.
Yeah, he's a silly cat, like, man. I love him.
He's hilarious, and I know how well you got along with Rick talking on the show. How's it been working with Chief? Because Craig Berube is one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet, and I think he's fit in well with you guys.
Yeah, he's exactly kind of like Talk. They're very similar, and it's been awesome to get somebody there who brings that coaching element. It makes us all better, just like Talk did, right? It makes you think. In some cases, like I'm like, oh, I learned it different. Like this is how I was told. It creates that debate. So, yeah, having Chiefs been incredible. Panger brings so much energy. That's what I love about Panger. So, like, it's entertainment, right? You want to be able to like reciprocate and bounce off somebody, and he's a world of knowledge, and he loves his job, right? He loves it. He loves the game, and he's self-deprecating too. So he's incredible. TNT is first class, and they only hire first class people. Like I could go down the list.
You know, I think you just said something that was important, and I think you'll really enjoy what I'm going to say. I was playing golf today with a couple of people, and today I said you were coming on the show with us tonight. And the gentleman that I was playing golf with, Biz, is not even a hockey guy. And he goes, he is so impressed with the way that you speak and the way that you break down games. That's not easy. And you have to break it down on television. And you do it so well. Like, do you watch certain things, or do you practice, or is it just right off the cuff? Because you are so well poignant in your... And by the way, I'm not taking anything away from you, Biz. You had a very short career, okay?
No, no,
you didn't do great things. But I will tell you. But I will tell you this. You are one of the best people to watch on television. Both personality, fun, but your analysis is so beautiful. Like, how did you do that? How did you figure that out?
So I remember how I said all these fortunate bounces along the way. Like, I had great coaches growing up, and then even all the way until my NHL, Mike Stuthers, who I won a Calder Cup with.
Yeah,
I would say definitely him, definitely a few before him, and the Pittsburgh organization always did a great job of hiring intelligent coaches. And then also Dave Tippett. Like when I wasn't playing a lot, I was sitting, you know, whether I was in the lineup, I was sitting in the middle of the bench.
Yeah.
So I was absorbing a lot. When he would describe, and we would, with Tippett, it wasn't a lot of skill. It was a lot of systems. We didn't really have the budget. He had to squeeze, you know, Squeeze a beaver so tight that, or what's the saying? You squeeze a nickel so tight the beaver will shit.
No. You squeeze the nickel so tight the buffalo farts.
Yeah, the buffalo farts. There you go. All right. So he was good at like getting teams to work together and structure and understanding that element of the game and why you were doing such things like back pressure, cutting the ice in half. Like if most guys were understood why you're doing it, they could adapt and want to do it and see where it would make you successful and show you where if it breaks down that it won't. So I always just did a good job of absorbing that because I had good coaches and I had to learn and be good at that because I wasn't good enough in the skill department where I might as well known where the fuck I was going out there. Weak side forward, head on a swivel, make sure if your guy dropped,
what's really cool? I just came up with this question. It's just, it's crazy. If I gave you the opportunity right now to go back to the National Hockey League and be a second line, just great, like very consistent, good player, right? Makes, good money or be the superstar that you are on social media and just everything.
Would I trade it?
No. What would you pick?
I'm okay with the way I'm okay with how it all went, but I definitely, if I could go back, I would have boozed less and I would have been more focused.
No, just right now, you have a choice. You're going to go into your social media superstardom or you're going to go back to the National Hockey League and play second line and battle on the ice every day.
For how long? How long is my second line career?
There's no length.
I'm good. I got to experience it. That's another thing too is I maybe some more now because as you evolve and you grow and you get opportunities like TNT, you're kind of more in the limelight where when I was a fourth liner, I wasn't really like, I don't know the pressures. Like what were the pressures like when you wouldn't score for five games? Would that build up in you? Would you start getting that anxiety that maybe I got from fighting where you're like, motherfucker, six games now I haven't scored, fucking newspapers are starting to hound on me. Like, I don't know if it ever got like that for you.
What are the pressures for you now?
No, but I'm saying like
no, so, but no, but what are the pressures for you now?
Just heavy workload, like expect just like it would. I'm sure for you when you were playing and you were a first liner, so it's just like that's the trade off. It's like you're kind of going. I'm going right back into the same situation where I was fortunate where I didn't have it would be I guess it leads me to say. It's very admiring for the young guys who kind of handled it and navigated it the right way. Because you talked about some of these mistakes you've made earlier in your career where it's like, yeah, buddy, like I probably would have made them too if I had the keys to the Ferrari when I was 22 years old. I did.
Yeah, right.
I was in the fucking coast. And then I was in the American League. Then I was in the AHL or NHL.
Love it.
So I went from the low league. And we talk about these experiences that I've experienced, like, I wouldn't trade my ECHL stories for the world. So I got to kind of see all levels of it.
It's so awesome.
I was just great. The fact that I got to the league was like, holy shit, this is unreal. Filet on the plane. Jesus Christ.
How much fun do you have playing in the Sandbaggers? Like I know Timu and Jared.
I get stressed out, bro. And then, I get stressed out.
And then you played with Avery the other day and Kevin Connolly.
Yeah.
And I texted with Aves and he's like, hey, don't tell anybody that they beat us in extra holes. Was that awesome with those?
It was
guys?
Unreal. Two incredible days. Like, but I will say it is nerve wracking because I'm like when I'm not playing a lot, I can't hit the ball.
And then we had
JR and Solani mopping the floor with us. He's like, he's drinking. He's like, hey, this is great. And I'm like, how are you piping this thing? Every dart there. Solani putt here. And then they ended it on the, what was it? The 16th with the hybrid.
Yeah, the hybrid shot.
I think you parred or birdied with the hybrid.
No, I birdied. I made birdie. I made birdie. It was so good because you just said legend. You just said legend. Legendary finish.
Legendary.
How was Kevin Connolly? Good guy?
He's great. And there was obviously a fall, like something that happened behind the scenes, and I won't comment on it, but we've always had a great time with those guys. He's always been kind to us. And I'm sure it'll resolve itself, and that's all I'll say about it. But those guys are great, and they took a whole day of their time to come out. And it sucks what happened.
Hey, Biz, real quick, okay? Because this is the last thing. We only got 2 minutes left. Give me your best short ECHL story, because a couple of our people in our chat line are asking. What's your quickest best ECHL story? That put you on the spot.
Yeah, like I would say that our owners, I think they own the Pirates, and they were great, great people, never had any, but they were a little cheap, and we had this sleeper bus, and it would break down sometimes before we would fucking leave. We'd be leaving town and like Wheeling Town Square, and this fucker would break down, and we'd like, it's a motherfucker, guy, just get a fucking bus that works. Like, I don't care. And at one time, we were on our way to a game, and luckily the booster bus was following us, like the booster squad. And our bus broke down, so we're on the side of the highway schlepping bags over to the booster bus, and they're going to wait for ours to get fixed and towed off so we could get to the game on time. Yeah. Like, fucking
fuck. And now you're getting picked up in a town car to go to the airport.
Yeah.
By
yeah.
Right?
Well,
hey,
yeah.
Life
yeah.
has so, changed a bit.
Hey, it took me a while to start flying first class, buddy. I was.
Yeah. So listen, in saying that with the ECHL stories and going back to the slap shot days, Dickie Dunn passed away today. So, Our Dickie Dunn passed away. The real Dickie Dunn, our guy, our guy from Slapshot. So that goes back to the story that you're just telling about the buses and the miners and all that stuff. So God rest Dickie Dunn too. And then listen, Biz, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us. You truly are one of my favorite people in the world. And, thank you for just being you. Because we need more people like you. We need more people like you. Keep doing a bang up job with TNT, and we need more people like you to listen to and watch. And you're a breath of fresh air, bro.
I love you guys. Thank you for everything. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
tell
Biz.
Your fans I said thank you. Keep doing your thing, and let's make it a yearly thing. I'd love to come back on.
Yeah, that's get me funny. On Spittin' Chicklets so I can just rip
you'll never rip. You're never coming back on the fucking sandbagger, you asshole. You, Peeler, you got an invite, but don't bring this asshole.
That was a drubbing of masterful proportions. I love you, Biz. I love you, Tim. That is Snipes and Stripes for another week edition on right here on. Oh, I think one of the best places in the world, Tim. It's the best place in the world. This is, we have a great podcast right here on our network, and we enjoy our fans. I can see everybody in the chat line. I wish they can get all of the things in on us, but Biz is just he's a fantastic guy, and we need more people like him that are going to speak the truth and give so much good entertainment with him.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'm sorry to the guys that tuned in tonight, but we wanted to let Biz talk. He's a busy man, and for him to take time out of his busy schedule to join us, JR, was awesome. I love you. I love you. You and I have been busy. I'm in Mexico. I don't even know where you are. You were all over the place the last few weeks, so.
Yeah,
we'll get it back on track. So,
yeah, we are. We'll be back next week. Actually, Monday we'll be back online for our Snipes and Stripes weekend edition. Get home, my friends. Enjoy Mexico. Have a margarita for me. I know the kids are on spring break. And thank you everybody for joining us this week on NoFilter.net. Snipes and Stripes is always the place for the best hockey content of all time. We will see you guys Monday for. Bye, buddy.